evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of January 31st, 2016. That's right. This is the final radio show for which I can say it's for the week of January something. We're already into the second week of the year. And gracious heavens, how it is flying by. It is an amazing time, and we've got a great show for you here today. If you're here with us live first, thank you very much. Think you're going to be in for a great show, and we would urge you to take part in our live chat that's open and available here at informationweek.com. Just type your question or comment into the box labeled your post, and be sure to click on that big red post button beneath the box. Well, joining me here on the air today is my frequent co-conspirator, partner in crime, Dave Wagner, who is executive editor for Community here at Information Week. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me. Though you're making me feel guilty because we just finally got the last of our Christmas lights down this week. So you're sort of embarrassing me that February has already come around.
You know, that's one of those things that's an interesting mark, I think, of the different regions, because in the South, where I grew up and have lived for most of my life, the normal thing is that it is bad luck to leave Christmas decorations up past New Year's Day. And so frequently, taking all of the decorations down is something that happens on New Year's Eve or even the day before. But when we lived in New England for a decade, we found that people kept their Christmas lights up, especially the outside Christmas lights, until, Easter. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it just stays so very dark in the more extreme latitudes that you need that bit of colorful cheer there to keep you from descending into what passes for, you know, snowborne madness. What do you think about that?
I think you're right. I think that's some of it. I also think that in New England, it's just too cold that nobody wants to go outside and get on a ladder and take things off a roof. You know, they put them up in October when it's not too bad, and then January comes around and they're freezing their tushes off. In my case, I just adore Christmas, and the reason we take ours down mostly has to do with the fact that we're embarrassed to have them up when the Super Bowl party comes around.
Ah, well, I can understand that. And it's funny, you mentioned Super Bowl. It seems like here in the U.S. this week, pretty much everything steps aside for the Super Bowl. It has become our major cultural touchstone event of the year. And this year, it happens to be in kind of your backyard out there in Silicon Valley.
True. I wish it was actually my backyard, because then I'd be much wealthier than I am. but yes, I got a chance this week to take a tour of some of the festivities. This year's Super Bowl is being billed as the most shareable Super Bowl ever, as well as the most technologically advanced Super Bowl ever. The city is really trying to roll out the red carpet for technological advances that otherwise wouldn't necessarily get a chance to be debuted to so many people at once.
Well, you took a trip down there shortly after it opened, and I'm curious, did you see things that added you away, or is it much more spectacle for the sake of spectacle?
Well, like all of these sorts of things, there's a fair amount of showmanship involved. I have to say it was quite a lot of fun. The biggest complaint around here in San Francisco is the level of security. There were times where I was at the event where I'm pretty sure police outnumbered the number of tourists. They're going around with guns, automatic weapons, dogs, There are snipers on the roof. It's a little bit of overkill when it comes to security. So sometimes it was a little hard to enjoy. But I have to say, some companies really rolled out some fun stuff. I got a chance to tour SAP. They have something called the Fan Energy Zone, and they have built, with some partners, some very fun games. By far the highlight was a game they called Quarterback Challenge, which allowed me to sit in a very comfortable chair wearing an Oculus Rift headset, playing a game where I got to throw virtual balls at receivers. It was really great. It gave me a chance to see how far Oculus Rift has come since the last time I got a chance to see it. I was impressed. I also got to win the Super Bowl on the last play, which was very exciting. But the best part about what SAP was doing to make it more technologically interesting was that if you were willing to download the app that everybody's using at the Super Bowl right now called the Road to 50 app and register, you would get real-time data of all of the games that you played with SAP. They had a total of 4, I believe. And that real-time data not only would show up on your phone to show you your score, but also your entire family score, so you could see how you did compared to your family. And you could also give it information like your favorite team or where you're from. And it would parse that information also to show you how you did against other fans of your favorite team or people of your age or people who have come from your city. And it was all backed by SAP's HANA, and it was a really excellent experience. And I got a chance to talk to VP Ward Bullard from SAP about why they were interested in doing that, because usually they're more of an enterprise-facing company, as you know. And Bullard said a very interesting thing, which is that this gave them an opportunity to really collect a huge amount of real-time data at once and learn from the way the public used it how to better display it. So what they're really hoping to do is, you know, they're hoping for hundreds of thousands of people to come through Super Bowl City in a week or two. They're really hoping to learn how that data was viewed and how interested it was, how people drilled down into it, to better learn how to display enterprise data in enterprise apps. So SAP is definitely one of the companies that was taking a real advantage of the audience that was there to learn something rather than to simply advertise.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it seems that SAP is making some major pushes into a lot, of sporting events. I know a colleague of ours, Sarah Peters, who is often with us here at Information Week Live, wrote an article a year and a half ago about how SAP is the engine behind the NBA's live statistics and the experience that they give their fans. And at SAP's Sapphire Conference, they always bring out McLaren for their participation in Formula One and motorsports. So this seems to be a way that SAP has chosen to demonstrate what it can do with a lot of data coming in from various sources that needs to be analyzed and then displayed in real time.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, we had the CIO of the NBA for the Information Week conference last year, and Sarah interviewed him at that conference. And that is another learning experience both for the NBA and SAP. They they had an interesting situation with the NBA, which is that they had accumulated all of these stats, and they thought they had done a very good job with making those stats readily available for the user. And if you are an expert in basketball, it definitely was very useful. But one of the things that they discovered was that somebody, a fan of the NBA, may not use the language in a query the way a database manager would. And that, of course, makes perfect sense. But training a computer to understand those kinds of queries from a different language and different point of view wasn't an easy thing. So one of the things they featured on our stage was that they were going to start doing things like often an assist in the NBA is colloquially called a dime. So somebody can now type in, or will soon be able to type into the NBA, who dropped the most dimes last night, and the HANA and the search engine that it's using will actually be able to understand that person means who had the most assists, and will put up that data. And I think that's an extremely important step forward for big data and analytics, not just in that kind of fun way we talk about sports, but it's equally true in a business setting where we have different words, different jargon, different metrics for measuring many of the same things from department to department. So breaking down just the language barrier for the way sales talks about something and the way IT talks about something is a crucial step to breaking down real silos when it comes to data and analytics.
Well, you know, I think it is fascinating that SAP, with its HANA platform, has pushed into something that most database administrators absolutely hate, and that is the ad hoc query, you know, just asking any given question on the spur of the moment. And that is a devilishly difficult thing to do with a large database because it's very inefficient. You know, it doesn't take advantage of all of the indices and keys that DBAs set up so that you can cut down the time that it takes to run, you know, all the normal reports. So that's difficult, and it seems like with what you're talking about, they're pushing not only into ad hoc queries, but natural language ad hoc queries, which is just an amazingly difficult set of problems to solve.
Right. I actually was at an event Tuesday night. It was an IoT event, and I was told a story that I believe I am privy to tell. I hope I am. I was told I could, but I wasn't telling anybody. I was going to tell it on the radio. But I was talking to the chief experience officer at GE, and he had previously been with SAP. And he said he was at a meeting one day about 5 years ago that included the executive board of SAP. And repeatedly during that meeting, questions would be asked, and someone in the room would say, "We'll have to get back to you with that information." And the CEO of SAP said, "Okay, let's take a minute here. Why is it that every time I ask you guys a question in a meeting, you tell me it's going to take 6 weeks to give me an answer? Why can't our meetings be more like conversations where I ask a question and I can get an answer?" And that meeting put SAP down the road towards ad hoc queries and data analytics in general, and I'm sure they were already going down that road, but it was a very interesting inside story on exactly why it was that SAP has really started to go down this road.
It is fascinating. And it's, to me, one of the fun things. I tend to go to the SAP Sapphire Conference every year, and it is amazing. The final keynote of Sapphire is always the Hasso Plattner, who stands up and presents about a 90-minute university lecture on some form of database and querying, and the excitement that he has about HANA is absolutely palpable. Because the goal is, as you say, we've got all this information. Why should it take an army of professionals and 6 weeks to tell me how our sales is doing at a particular store somewhere?
Exactly.
And I've got to admit, the demonstrations that they present are pretty compelling for doing things like putting it into retail. This is one of the reasons why SAP has put a lot of effort into making displays available on things like tablets, because in the retail space, they want to allow customers to walk up to someone who comes in the door and with a very quick exchange, know that person's history with the corporation. You know, so if you're a retailer and one of your customers comes in the door, you should be able to know what they've bought from you, what they've looked at, what they've returned, and use that to help them have a better experience. And like I said, I think it's a compelling vision for the future, even if it is an exceptionally expensive vision for the future right now.
What's amazing that it is expensive, certainly, and you have to justify it while at the same time competing for price on retail, right? But it is not as expensive an effort as even it was, say, 5 years ago. And it is amazing how far we've come. And that vision you described is very similar to what Ward Bullard, the vice president at SAP, described to me when he was talking about what he wanted people to get out of the Super Bowl City experience. He said it was very important to him that somebody have a personal experience, a moment of fun, and in real time, at the moment, at the end of that experience, they're given a piece of digital content that allows them to remember it. It allows them to think about it again, to look at it from angles they didn't think about while they were in the middle of that experience. And in very much that's a retail mindset, right? Is if somebody walks through the door at a store, say it's Walmart, just as an example, they look at various televisions for the Super Bowl, and they want to buy one, but they're not sure which one they get. Coming out of that store with a sense of these are the televisions I looked at, this is the information I got from my trip, so that I can think about it again before I finally make my choice, would be an incredibly valuable thing, at least on something like a television that has a high ticket value. Whether we'll ever get that experience down to, you know, shopping for gum, I don't know. But when it comes to big ticket items, that seems like a doable thing.
That it does. Now, I think it's interesting, turning from SAP slightly, SAP has certainly placed its eggs in the HANA basket. Now, it offers HANA in an on-premises version that you host on your own machine, and it offers it in a cloud version that requires much less of an upfront cost. IBM is going, it seems, almost entirely in the direction of the cloud right now for its big database plays. And I think that is fascinating that IBM, while it still has a huge mainframe business, and it is very happy to tell you the kinds of problems that mainframes can solve for you. It's really looking to the cloud to replace its older mid-range and Intel-based server business with cloud services for lots and lots of companies. What do you think about this cloud push from a traditional hardware company like IBM? Is this sort of some sort of tacit admission that hardware doesn't have a great future, or is this a wily kind of strategy to add to their mainframe business?
Well, I think both of those can be true at the same time. I think we just talked about how expensive analytics can be when you're talking about real-time customer experience, right? So it seems like it is an almost a given to me that cloud analytics is going to be the way of analytics, that the expense, getting rid of some of the expense of the hardware, because we know cloud can be cheaper if done correctly, I stress correctly, getting rid of some of the expense, getting rid of some of the upfront expense for sure. Also, I think the other expense in analytics is the expertise, right? So paying for somebody to create the algorithm, paying for somebody to create the experience is not always in the reach of smaller companies. So I think cloud analytics is a certainty. And so it's smart of anybody who's in analytics to make sure they have some sort of cloud presence. With that, though, when you're talking about analytics as a service, it actually doesn't necessarily matter what the service looks like behind the scenes, right? So if IBM wants to, quote, eat its own dog food, unquote, and use some of its mainframes to show how they can do analytics that way, and they don't, you know, their cloud isn't servers, it's, you know, they're going to crunch their numbers with a mainframe, that's a doable thing, and it might showcase to people with a larger budget how they're doing analytics and that their analytics is a little different, because instead of a bunch of little servers in a cloud, they're also still using their mainframe business. I don't know if that's their strategy, but I know that cloud architecture means a certain thing, but I think to the average vendor, I don't think they care what the cloud is made up of. What they want is a network connection to a set of analytics abilities, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. And to me, the interesting thing about this is the flip. For 20 years or more, the model was really that you had these client-server architectures, the Intel-based architectures that gathered stuff, did things, and then fed it up to the mainframe where it would be analyzed and reports would be generated. And today, it seems that in many cases, not all, but in many cases, it's the mainframe that's being used as the I.O. monster that mainframes can be. And when it comes time to really do massive analysis on the data, you take things from the mainframe and farm them out to the cloud. And I just find that a fascinating step in the evolution of all of the IT that makes up the enterprise.
Right. There's this ability to break down a problem in a way we never could before, so we could use a lot of little computers to solve a big problem.
Well, Dave, we're coming down close to the end of the show today, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the things that you're looking at and the things that you're keeping an eye on, both this weekend for the coming week.
Right. Well, interestingly enough, I can't give you as detailed and a sort of view as I normally can give into this because I'm still putting things together. But I want to devote this week to looking at the resume. I think the resume as a concept is really changing in IT fast. You know, we have the ability to upload our portfolios and our work in places like GitHub, but we still have this piece of paper with our name on it and our experience on it. And I think it's really changing. I think hiring managers are looking at it differently. We even have heat maps to show how they're looking at these things these days. And I really want to talk about what the resume of the 21st century even should look like in IT. So I'm doing some exploring on that, talking to a few people. That's what I'm focusing on this week. We'll see what comes of that in the end. It's still an amorphous sort of swirling process as I'm gathering data, but I think I'm really hoping to find something kind of cool coming from that and hopefully useful.
It sounds like the kind of things that absolutely should be both interesting and useful for everyone. Now, while we're waiting for all of this to happen, how can we keep up with you on social media?
Sure. At Geekend Dave, which is weekend but with a G, that's on Twitter. And, of course, you can always find me at Information Week and at allanalytics.com as well. And by the way, sorry for plugging myself right now, but I have an article at allanalytics.com right now about using data as a strategic defense that I just have to say I really enjoyed writing, and I really think it's a useful article. I kind of hope somebody can go find it because sometimes, you know, you just as an author, you write something that you kind of feel is kind of cool, and you just want people to see it. I think it's a really useful article, especially if you're in analytics or strategic C-level seat.
Well, we will absolutely take a look at that, Dave. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for giving me the chance to plug.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, always a pleasure. Now, as for me, I'm going to be doing more in the world of DevOps and software development. I've got a DevOps slideshow coming up at Information Week. And also want to remind everyone that we're getting into the time of year when we are looking forward to the Information Week Elite 100 conference. And we have all of the entries. The judging is just about over. So in February, you'll start to see some articles coming out on informationweek.com about the Elite 100. These are opportunities to learn from the companies who are doing it right when it comes to IT. Of course, all this leads up to the conference itself, which happens first week of May in Las Vegas. It's taking place at the Four Seasons Hotel, and it's concurrent with the first couple of days of Interop. So take a look at informationweek.com. If you look at the homepage, right up at the top, there's a tab for events, and under that, you'll find the Information Week Elite 100 conference. Also be on the lookout for the write-ups of these entries that will be coming your way in the very near future. This is going to be great, great stuff. Well, for Dave Wagner, I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor for Technical Content at Information Week. Hope you'll follow me on social media at KG4GWA on Twitter, Curtis Franklin at LinkedIn and Facebook. We'll be back here this time next week, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and we hope that you'll join us. It should be another great week for Information Week and the IT industry. Thanks for being with us. Hey, we'll see you next time.